Good morning, everyone. We'll call to order the September 25th, 2019 variance hearing. Hope you're all doing well. My name is Corey Teague. I'm the zoning administrator. I'm joined by our executive secretary, Ava Atahera Taylor. I'm going to go over just some general information about how the hearing will go today. Regarding the order of presentation, project sponsors and or property owners shall be allowed 5 minutes to present oral arguments on how the five findings that are required to meet a variance are justified. The applicant should also submit the declaration of posting when they approach to present their case. Any members of the public, both supporters and opponents of a proposed variance, shall be allowed 3 minutes each to speak. If there's any public testimony in opposition to a proposed variance, the applicant is allowed a 3-minute rebuttal. I may ask questions of the applicant and or members of the public. And at the end of the item, I may close the public hearing and take the matter under advisement. I may continue the item to a future date, or I may indicate my action on the item today. Items listed on the consent calendar are matters considered routine by the zoning administrator, and if anyone would like to speak on one of those items, please step up when that item is called. Otherwise, it will be granted. There are currently 2 items listed on the consent calendar today. Public comment at the end of the hearing shall be allowed for items not on the agenda, and members of the public are allowed 3 minutes each to speak at that time if they wish. Regarding the criteria for justifying a variance, Planning Code Section 305C states that in order to grant a variance, the zoning administrator must determine that the facts of the case are sufficient to establish the following 5 findings. Finding 1, that there are exceptional and extraordinary circumstances applying to the property involved or to the intended use of the property that do not apply generally to other property or uses in the same class of district. Finding 2, that owing to such exceptional and extraordinary circumstances, the literal enforcement of specified provisions of the Planning Code would result in practical difficulty or unnecessary hardship not created by or attributable to the applicant or the owner of the property. Finding 3, that such variance is necessary for the preservation and enjoyment of a substantial property right of the subject property possessed by other property in the same class of district. Finding 4, that the granting of such variance would not be materially detrimental to the public welfare or materially injurious to the property or improvements in the vicinity. And finding 5, that the granting of such variance will be in harmony with the general purpose and intent of the Planning Code and will not adversely affect the general plan. Please be aware that no decision is final until the decision letter is issued. And due to current backlogs, decision letters may take up to 2 months to complete from the date of this hearing. If anyone would like to receive a copy of the decision letter, please complete the sign-up sheet located at the far wall and provide your contact and mailing information. And I just want to reiterate that point. We've been getting a good bit of contact from sponsors very shortly after variance hearings, expecting their letters to be available within a week or two. I just want to clarify that right now we're on about a 2-month timeline for letters getting out after hearing. Sometimes it's sooner than that, sometimes it's a little bit longer depending, but just want to make that clear for all the project sponsors in the room. Regarding an appeal of a variance, the zoning administrator's actions to grant or deny a variance application may be appealed to the Board of Appeals within 10 days of the date of the decision letter. And again, no decision is final until that letter is issued. Private conversations are very disruptive to the hearing, so please conduct all of those outside the hearing room. The next variance hearing is scheduled for October 23rd, 2019. And audio recordings of variance hearings are available on the Planning Department's website for hearings going back to January 1st, 2011. So with that, we'll move on to today's calendar. And we'll start with a couple housekeeping items. First, item number 11 for 2727 Vallejo Street, case number 2018-003023VAR. Had a request for discretionary review filed for its associated building permit, and the discretionary review hearing by the Planning Commission is scheduled for January 9th, 2020. Second, the project sponsor for item number 8 for 780 to 782 Kansas Street has requested a continuance to the December 5th variance hearing. So for those items, they'll both be called during the continuance calendar. And so if anyone is interested in speaking on the continuance, the proposed continuances of those projects, you should speak up at that time. So we'll go ahead and call, let's see, we'll move on, yes. So we'll now go ahead and call the items for continuance.
So there are, like the ZA said, there are three items in continuance. One, item number one, case number 2018-01941 VAR, 2028 Leavenworth Street. This will be continued to Thursday, December 19, to at the regular scheduled Planning Commission hearing in room 200. Then item number eight, case number 2018-002825 VAR, 780 to 782 Kansas Street. This will be continued to December 5, 2019. And the last item, number 11, case number 2018-003023 VAR, 2727 Vallejo Street. They are filed and will be continued to January 9, 2020.
Does anyone have any comment on those proposed continuances? Okay, seeing none, those three items are continued as stated. And with that, we will now move on to the consent calendar.
There are two items in our consent calendar. Item number two, case number 2019-004440 VAR, 2045 Jackson Street, rear yard variance sought. Item number three, case number 2018-016399 VAR, 1805 Divisadero Street, rear yard and open space variances sought.
Is there any public comment on these two items on the consent calendar? Okay, seeing none, I'll close the public comment, and both of those items will be granted with standard conditions.
Moving to our regular calendar, case item number four, case number 2018-013006 VAR, 550 10th Avenue, rear yard variance sought. Is the project sponsor here? Please approach the mic. You have 5 minutes, sir.
Good morning. I was actually given notice of this hearing on Friday, so I don't really have much prepared. I do have the plans. I emailed them to David Winslow. This is a project that's been going on since 2015. Originally, I had a permit issued by the building department to put the garage in the front of the house underneath. About a month after the permit was issued, after work commenced, planning temporarily suspended that permit as a neighbor complained. Pending a hearing. I spent a few months negotiating, trying to figure out what the issue was to ultimately withdraw that permit. I then had a permit to, that permit was associated with remodeling the interior of the house. I then, as part of withdrawing to put the garage under the house, I got a new permit. On the plans, it showed rebuild garage in kind in rear yard. I did the work to rebuild the garage in kind in the rear yard. Neighbor complained. Building inspection came out and said, no, it's on the plans, it's on the permit. Planning came out and said, well, you need a variance to rebuild the garage in the backyard. No one told me. Since then, I've been working for, seems like a year, with neighbors trying to figure out what the issue is. I ultimately came up with three plans and worked with planning and all the neighbors to come up with the current plan, which is to put the garage closer to the house underneath an existing deck, extend the deck out 5 feet, which would then, and then have a 3-foot setback along the property line for the railing. So the neighbor who had filed a discretionary review at the first variance hearing has now withdrawn it, and we're on the same page, and I believe everyone's in agreement that this is acceptable.
Do you have a copy of the new version of the plans with the
3-foot
setback? Do you mind showing that on the overhead?
Do you want the from the overhead view of the new garage?
Yeah. Site plan, preferably.
Okay, and there's several pages. But okay, so this is the subject property.
Can you speak to the mic, please? Can you speak to the mic because we're recording the.
So my finger is pointing to the subject property of 550 10th Avenue. You have the new, so the previous deck used to be, or garage used to be right here, same as the two neighbors. We are now putting it here underneath an existing deck, extending the deck out. This line right here represents the 3-foot setback that the neighbor requested that I was fine with.
Is the 3-foot setback for the deck or for the entire garage structure?
No, just for the railing.
Just for the railing, top. Okay, so the garage would stay...
The garage stays on the property line. He's fine with that. There's actually a fence on that property line, so it just goes up, and it probably sticks... between the existing garage and the fence, there's 6 inches, so that gets filled in. But otherwise...
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, I will close public comment. I know this case has had a little bit of an interesting history, and it's taken a little time to get where we are. I think the ultimate resolution makes a lot of sense. It's a fairly minor variance request compared to rebuilding in the required rear yard. So I intend to grant with standard conditions.
Perfect, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Moving to item number 5, case number 2019-001507VAR. 432 Bryant Street, ground floor, active space, variance sought. Is the project sponsor here? You have 5 minutes.
Good morning. Ashley Brakefield with Ferrell, Lebron & Martell, Land Use Council for the project sponsor here. The project here is a change in use from warehouse to office in an existing two-story building that was constructed in 1921 and contains approximately 4,800 square feet of interior space. To obtain the change in use, the project seeks a variance from the planning code, specifically section 145.1C, that requires space for active uses be provided within the first 25 feet of building depth on the ground floor in mixed-use districts, like the Central SoMa mixed-use office district where the property is located. The office use sought here is not considered an active use in this particular zoning pursuant to section 249.78C1B. This would have required that the first 25 feet of the frontage would be required to be occupied by some active use that is not an office use. However, compliance with this section is impractical. In 2014, 2015, improvements were installed at the property and the space was reconfigured such that fully two-thirds of the building's horizontal frontage, which frontage includes the first 25 feet of the ground floor, is occupied by load-bearing walls and improvements like restrooms, a kitchen, entries, and circulation spaces. Because of the existence of these improvements and facilities and the need to preserve the load-bearing walls, these spaces are not available for the non-office active use. And also, given the nature of this 1921 building, it's really not possible to provide the direct access and transparency that an active use would require, even if the space were otherwise available. First, the ground floor elevation is approximately about a foot and a half or 1 foot 5 inches above the sidewalk elevation, which makes direct access from the street impossible without using up a large fraction of the space with an access ramp. Furthermore, because the project is requesting a variance from the active use requirements, there will be no active ground floor use, which would render compliance with this requirement moot, even if it could comply. And second, it's inherently impossible to achieve the transparency required by section 145.1C6, without disrupting the historic fabric of the building, since the sill elevation of the existing windows is above the eye level of any person who's standing on the sidewalk and would require significant construction to the facade to rectify this noncompliance. Without transparency, active use loses its desirable street animating function, and with an active use variance as requested, there is less need for transparency from the street level. I'm available to answer any questions you might have. We also have the project's architect, Harvey Hacker, available as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any members of the public who'd like to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, close the public comment. I generally agree with all the arguments raised. It's kind of a unique situation with the slope, with the raised ground floor, with the historic facade, that all makes sense in terms of not really being practical or meeting the intent of the code to meet those provisions. One quick question, though, is... There's no there's no like vehicular parking or loading here. So is the current plan to remove the curb cut at the front?
That is their current plan. And we submitted revised drawings that show that curb cut removal, I think a couple weeks ago before the hearing.
Okay, great, thank you. I tend to grant this with the standard conditions and either with updated plans showing the curb cut removed or a condition that the curb cut be removed.
Okay, moving to item number six, case number 2019-000418 VAR, 674 Sanchez Street, rear yard variance sought. Project sponsor, please approach the mic. You have 5 minutes.
Good morning, Mr. Ting. My name is Jim Stavoy. I'm the architect for the project. I'm actually here today with the owner of the property, Mr. Michael Lance, and also one of our neighbors, who's the rear property owner behind our project, Joanna and Bruce Bowern. I feel quite strongly that there are exceptional and extraordinary circumstances about this property. If you notice on the site plan that I'm showing, there are a combination of issues, primarily related to the block configuration. If you'll notice, the property to the rear of our project actually fronts on 20th Street on an opposite street, and that totally encloses our property in terms of separating us from possible rear yard open space. The property also is sited on a very steep uphill lot, which created another nuance for our site that required the initial house to be constructed 14 feet behind the initial front property line, again moving the original house back onto the property, and that also limits the possible expansion into the rear yard. The third thing is that you'll notice that the adjacent neighbors on both sides actually extend further than our property's proposal, even for our small 6-foot addition. And finally, the final item is the fact that our property is actually only 80 feet deep, so that further limits the amount of space for expansion. Again, the unnecessary hardships are the topography of the site, the rear of our property. The rear of our property is approximately 25 feet above the street, so that has limited also the possibility for expansion of the house. Again, I mentioned that the siting of the house is set back 14 feet from the front property line, and again the 80-foot property depth. Other properties that enjoy property lights that are enjoyed by other properties in the neighborhood include the fact that both neighbors extend further than we do already, the fact that the rear neighbor that I showed previously was able to construct their house actually at the very rear of their property, which changes the entire environment of our site. And if in fact we had a larger lot, which would be probably a 100-foot lot typical in San Francisco, the expansion would have been possible to happen within the requirements of the Delora Site Special Use District. So in summary, the one other sort of minor factor is that both adjacent neighbors do not have windows. These are the side neighbors, do not have windows that look onto our property. So there's essentially no impact to the side neighbors. And the neighbor to the rear, because of the topography, sits extremely high above our house. And that neighbor is here to speak to that as well. Again, with the addition that we're proposing, our rear yard addition will still not exceed our neighbors. The neighbors on both sides are also at the rear of the property as shown on this one diagram, are actually two stories in height, and our project is essentially a one-story addition. Finally, the addition will greatly enhance actually the usage of the interior of the house, creating a much more usable family room space that will access a redesigned and landscaped rear yard. So that's my proposal. My client is here and I'd like to say a few words.
Sure.
If possible. Thank you.
Great. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to say a few words. As Jim mentioned, this is a project that we hope we can get approved. It will help us give ourselves access to the backyard. Our plan is to keep the backyard the way it is in terms of the trees and the green space and so on. We've lived in the neighborhood for since 1998 in this property since for the past 10 years, and we have a tight connection with our neighbors, and we haven't heard any comments or objections to what we're doing. We think it will definitely be in harmony with the space.
Great.
So thank you.
Thank you. Is there any public comment on this item?
You have 3 minutes, sir.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Bruce Bowen. I live at 4016 20th Street. My house is directly behind 674 Sanchez.
Oops. Thank
you. I'm here to voice my support for this variance. As you can see in this picture, which is a little different view of what you've already seen, our house is one of the few, only three, that will be directly affected by the addition to the rear at the house at 674. This is our house here. 674 extends less into the rear setback than either of its neighbors. Even with the modest addition allowed for this variance, 674 will not extend farther into the rear setback than its neighbors. The addition will not, by any measure, substantially affect the block's open space. This addition will allow 674 to enjoy a modest increase in usability and parity with nearby homes in a way that minimally affects neighbors' properties. I'm happy to see a modest addition that increases a home's livability, that is sensitive to the context, that does not adversely affect neighbors, that provides for the future and does not create conflict, even if a minor variance is required. Now, this variance also has some similarities to a minor rear setback variance that was approved for 660 Sanchez in 2015, which I also supported. In that variance decision, language was used that may be in standard conditions, it may be in every variance, but I hope it would be in this one also, that any future physical expansion, even in the buildable area, shall be reviewed by the zoning administrator to determine if the expansion is compatible with existing neighborhood character and scale. Finally, I'd like to thank Michael and Jim for being so transparent and responsive throughout this process up to this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment on this item?
You have 3 minutes, ma'am.
Thank you. I'm Yanona Jonas, and I live at 4016 20th Street, and we are the neighbors most affected by this project. Since the beginning, both the project sponsor, Michael Lance, and his architect have worked closely with us to make sure that our concerns were taken into consideration when they made their design and came up with the final plans. And for that reason, and we have worked closely, and the changes, our requested changes were certainly taken into consideration. So we ask that you grant this variance. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment on this item? Okay, with that, public comment is closed. Thank you to the project sponsor for so thoroughly laying out all the ways the project meets the required five findings. That's always appreciated. I happen to agree with basically all the points. You know, I think this is pretty textbook for being kind of a unique situation, both in the nature of the lot itself and the context within the block and the surrounding buildings. And you combine that with the fact that it is a very modest proposal that will improve the livability of the existing home without really having any negative impacts on the surrounding buildings. I think this project definitely meets the requirements for granting a variance. Just to answer the question from the neighbor, it is a standard condition on all variances that, you know, future additions, even in the buildable area, are reviewed by the zoning administrator. So that will be one of the conditions of approval. You all articulated everything so well. I might enlist you to draft the letter just kidding. That was a very good job. Thank you. So I intend to grant with standard conditions.
Moving to item number 7, case number 2018-012501VAR, 45 Clarendon Avenue, side yard variance sought. Project sponsor, please approach the mic. Project sponsor for 45 Clarendon Avenue.
Let's move this to the end of the calendar then.
Jumping to number 8 is a continuance. This is 780 to 782 Kansas Street, continued to December 5, 2019. Moving to item number 9, case number 2019-003900VAR, 1526 Masonic Avenue, rear yard variance sought. You have 5 minutes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Teague. Jeremy Paul on behalf of the project sponsor. This is a really extraordinary property in San Francisco. It is the largest lot on the block, second only to the large apartment building directly behind it. It's a huge parcel with a very small house, 2,100 square feet, set all the way forward at the front of the property. It's a Bernard Maybach house of considerable architectural merit. The Hurlbuts have lived there for 17 years and have been restoring the house piece by piece. And they've been doing it entirely in the basement workshop. Mr. Hurlbut also likes to build small boats, but his boat projects sometimes are a little bit too big to fit in the basement. So they started to think about how they can improve a workshop. We spoke about it early on, and working with their architect, came up with an idea for a small cottage, an artist's studio to work in. In speaking with city planning, we were encouraged to consider expanding not just a small kitchen for the use of the person working, but turn it into a studio that could be lived in. And that was enthusiastically leapt upon by Mr. Hurlbut's son, who views this as being the place he comes back to when he finishes college. And in the future, it could be a residence. It's been designed very carefully within a very small footprint. We've confined it to 785 square feet with a design meant to complement the Maybach style and echo elements of the Maybach styles, specifically the geometry, but not to mock it or to imitate it. Very early on in this, I was concerned about the historical ramifications of the property, and I spoke with Tim Fry about this several times in design development, and we discussed the other option of building directly on the house, which is what the planning code would encourage. And he said, no, this is exactly what you should be doing in a historic situation like this. So to go to the findings directly, as you complimented the last presenter, the exceptional extraordinary circumstance is the overwhelming priority of maintaining the integrity of the Maybach house and not doing a horizontal addition at the rear. Houses on both sides extend beyond. The one to the north extends considerably beyond. And the exceptional, extraordinary circumstance of the oversized yard, the fact that we have such enormous space to create more housing, encourages us to respond to it in that way. You have the plans, the diagrams, and the illustrations before you, so I can run through them for you if you have any questions. But I would like to just end by saying there's been some correspondence from an adjacent neighbor who didn't understand the process that we were entering into. And I felt that I did my best to explain what the variance procedure was going to be like or what the application procedure was going to be like. And there's been a lot of frustration from his side that he didn't get that. We haven't heard specific challenges to design or to the location of the cottage as we've presented it. And if there are such objections, we're looking forward to being able to address that directly. But so far, we've only heard that there procedural questions were unanswered. I'd just like to place it before you on that basis. And if there are issues raised, we'll talk about them in rebuttal.
Yeah, thank you very much. Are there any members of the public who'd like to speak on this item? Please come forward.
You have 3 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm Matt Fisher. I live at 1524 Masonic Street with my wife and two boys. We have our home for 9 years. We live right next door. 1526 Masonic has the rare benefit of owning a double lot in San Francisco. This affords them several design options for their two-story dwelling within the planning rules. They never made any attempts to do this from what we've seen, and instead directly asked for a variance in order to build a two-story building towards the rear of their property. This would sit just off center of the mid-block open space and not be like any other dwelling in the neighborhood. This creates a precedent and changes the characteristics of the neighborhood, placing a structure where they selected as unnecessary when they could build within their building envelope. Granting them this variance to place the structure wherever they please gives them a right no other property owner has in San Francisco. In 2014, we did a remodel where we expanded the length of our deck 6 feet. We respected the mid-block open space and built this in our allowable building envelope. Why should 1526 Masonic be granted special rights other than that others in San Francisco don't have to place a two-story dwelling wherever they please, especially when there are other design options that would maintain the integrity of their historic house and maintain the neighborhood pattern of which has been there for 120 years? Given this unusual project, we asked the Hulberts if they could meet with us in the planning a planner from San Francisco multiple times so we could better understand this project. They never made an effort to set up this meeting and only provided a community meeting in March. This community meeting with our adjacent neighbor, 1550 Masonic, was not present. 1550 Masonic was just sold in May, and the new owners, I'm not sure if they even know about this project. I appreciate your time. Thank you, and I appreciate you hearing our concerns.
Thank you. Any other public comment on this item?
Hi, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm Dorothy Fisher. I also live at 1524 Masonic, built in 1900 with my husband, two sons, 6 and 12, and we've lived in this home for 9 years. This proposed two-story dwelling would severely impact our enjoyment of our portion of the mid-block open space and the enjoyment of our yard. It would also be out of character of the layout of a 100-plus-year-old neighborhood. It would dramatically impair, our family's privacy with our home. With regard to the enjoyment of our mid-block open space and our yard, the project is directly in conflict with the preservation of the mid-block open space, which was established over 100 years ago, and it would interrupt the clear neighborhood pattern. While the plan shows that the two-story dwelling would be towards the back, it would actually sit just off center of the neighborhood's shared mid-block open space, given the layout of the neighboring homes. The new structure would severely impact our family's enjoyment of our yard. Given that 1526 is uphill from us, this two-story dwelling would have the visual and physical impact of a 30-foot structure adjacent to the middle of our own yard. They argue that they need the structure to expand their workshop. However, the possibility to mitigate the noise generated from a workshop or other activities is far easier within or adjacent to their home, rather than at the rear of their yard, where it would be adjacent to a large sound-reflecting cement wall. Placing the structure where they have proposed is unnecessary when they could build within their building envelope. As for privacy, because we're downhill from 1526, the two-story structure would face directly into our kitchen, our dining room on the second floor, and our master bedroom in the third floor. To give you perspective of how tall this two-story dwelling would be in relation to our home, the peak of the roof would be at least a foot higher than the railing off our bedroom on the third floor. The dormer windows would look right into our bedroom, have full view into the kitchen, dining room, and perhaps beyond. In order to build this two-story dwelling, a significant pittosporum tree of at least 80 years would need to be removed. This is one of the trees that is not shown in the plans. This tree is what gives our backyard both its screening. Unfortunately, the loss of privacy isn't eased by the trees that would remain in the yard. They've identified the ginkgo and the hawthorn as ones that would stay. However, these trees drop their leaves every year, reducing screening potential for our family's privacy. Thus, having this two-story dwelling that could see directly into our home would dramatically impact our family's privacy. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you as well. May I ask you a quick question? Yeah. I'm sorry. So I know there have been discussions of potentially filing a discretionary review on this project. Has that happened? Is that planned to happen?
From what we understand, this meeting had to happen first, and then the discretionary review could happen. We've asked to sit down with a planner, and we haven't had that opportunity.
Okay, so just to be clear, because I know this has come up, and we just want to make sure, and there's issues of process. We want to make sure process is understood clearly. The variance hearing is happening kind of its own separate track. Whenever any building permit is put out for notification, there's an expiration date for that notice. If you desire to file a discretionary review, you have to file that application by the last day before that expires.
Yes.
Kind of regardless of the timing of the variance.
I see.
It didn't have to wait on the variance. You know, that you can go either way. It's fine. I just want to make that clear.
Thank you.
And I want to understand if it's your intent, regardless of timing, within the expiration period to file a discretionary review.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have 3 minutes, sir.
Not on the clock. I just wanted to mention that the planner has told the Fishers that they would not be allowed to file a discretionary review until she sends out the 311 notice. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay. My name is Neil Schwartz. The Fishers asked me to review the proponent's variance application. I've been a practicing architect in San Francisco for over 20 years, including being the chair of the AIA's Public Policy and Advocacy Committee, which works closely with the Director of Current Planning, Jeff Jocelyn, and his design and historic review staff to improve permitting procedures in the city. A common theme in our work together has emerged. If we hope to improve the system, it is critical that project sponsors and their hired representatives provide accurate, truthful, and clear submissions. Beyond the lack of any compelling argument for the variance approval through the five findings, I believe this application should be denied simply due to the misleading nature of the application and process. The Fishers handed the project proponents a letter of concern at the community meeting to be included alongside the required affidavit. Despite signing this affidavit, Jeremy Paul, the permit expediter, chose to neither include nor summarize the contents of their letter as required. To quote from the affidavit, erroneous information may lead to the suspension or revocation of the permit. Jeremy Paul counseled neighbors that the project review meetings with planning were, quote unquote, very rare, only for much larger projects, and, quote, would take months to set up. None of this is true. In this exhibit, the above exhibit shows that the project proponent's site plan prepared by ESLO. Below is the exact plan from the project proponent overlaid onto a recent Google Earth image. The application states that no trees will be removed. The obvious deception is concerning and flies in the face of reality. This analysis shows an allowable square footage of development of approximately 4,800 square feet, assuming only two stories. The owners could easily develop a code-compliant structure of equal size and still have over 4,000 square feet of allowable development space to spare. How many of us can say that? Finally, we note that the estimated construction cost for the project is stated as $220,000, a mere $292 per square foot. Similar projects routinely cost between $600 and $900 per square foot. One has to act once again if this application is self-serving and knowingly deceptive.
Okay, thank you, sir. Is there any other public comment on this item? Please step forward.
You have 3 minutes, sir.
So my name is I'm Matt Polito. I live at 1560 on Masonic Avenue. It's two doors away. I submitted a letter to you in support of this project. Just to kind of summarize, I think that this is warranted. I think that I'm given the historic nature of the house, the fact that it sits on a double wide lot, the fact that the house is all the way in the front of the property, it has, you know, has enough open space. I appreciate the fact that they didn't want to add onto the existing building, and they wanted to put like a building in the back. I think the architecture of the new building is very, very beautiful and will go well with the neighborhood.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there any other public comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, the project sponsor has 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Teague. To go to the points raised, the pre-application meeting, I don't think that the communication went the same way on either side of that discussion. I tried to explain that a project review meeting is something that's done between the project sponsor and the department in developing an application, that it's not typically a negotiation between parties or a mediation between parties. That's not what that process is set up for, and that clearly wasn't understood. And they did hand me a letter to city planning, which my understanding was something that they had submitted to city planning. And it didn't seem to be part of the material that I was submitting in response. If they asked me to include it in what I was submitting to the city with my building permit application, I'm not sure I would have understood how to present that to the department or what to do with it. The points about that were presented about the mid-block open space, we will still have more mid-block open space than the adjacent parcels will. Building behind us is a large apartment building set considerably back in the lot. We have a row of large trees that were planted for screening there. In my application packet, they're identified as Chinese nonsense trees, which was clearly a spell check error on the hornbeams, and they're healthy. There's pittosporum that is along the northern property line that were planted for screening, but they have grown too large to provide good screening. Those do not need to be removed to achieve this project, although it is our intention to replace them with an evergreen, which will provide better screening than the old and spindly pittosporum that are there. We did discuss one other tree, which is a bay that is in poor condition. You have a report from a tree specialist indicating the advanced disease in the bay. There are no other trees need to be removed in the course of this project. Our plan is to maintain the landscaping and the intent of the original layout of the garden.
Thank you very much. Just generally speaking, I think In regards to exceptional and extraordinary circumstances, and this is obviously a somewhat unique property, both in its context, both in the presence of the Category A Maybeck structure, the essentially the size of the space, but then also the adjacent apartment building and what that does to the mid-block open space. Having said that, you know, the issues of design appropriateness generally fall on the planning department and then through extension to the planning commission if a discretionary review is filed. So, you know, I will be taking this matter under advisement because it does appear that a discretionary review will be filed and that issue will have to be further resolved by the planning commission. Just to clarify for everyone in the room who's interested, you know, a discretionary review is filed on a building permit, and that is able to be filed once the neighborhood notification goes out during that 30-day period. The notice basically says this is the proposal. The department has reviewed it. It meets all of the code requirements and review requirements and or maybe needs a variance, but for all other purposes, it's basically ready to move forward. If you have concerns, obviously contact the department or the project sponsor, and if you can't work out your concerns, you can file a discretionary review, but that must be filed before the deadline. So that is obviously still an option. The 311 notification started last week and will run through October 18th, which I believe is a Friday. So that is an option there. Obviously, I wasn't present and haven't had a lot of conversations about the pre-application meeting or any other meetings, but just to provide a little clarification, the required pre-application meeting is a department policy where we require project sponsors to call a meeting with their immediate neighbors and the neighborhood groups to basically provide information about what they plan to propose. A project review meeting is a meeting where essentially the project sponsor wants to meet with the planning department to go over a project and get more information about either code issues or design issues or everything in between. And I don't know if this project went through a project review meeting or not, but it is generally just between the project sponsor and the planning department. This is a very interesting, interesting case. I'll be very curious to see how it moves forward through the planning commission. But again, I would take this matter under advisement. Thank you.
Moving to item number 10, case number 2019-012051 VAR. Number 1, Raycliffe Terrace, side yard variance sought. Project sponsor, please approach the mic. Is the project sponsor for 1 Raycliffe Terrace here? Okay, the last item on our calendar, 2727 Vallejo Street, has been continued, to January 9, 2020. Now we're going back to item number 7, case number 2018-012501 VAR, 45 Clarendon Avenue, side yard variance sought. Are you the project sponsor? Please approach the mic, sir. Yes, I will set it up for you.
Thank you.
Yes.
There you go. Okay. My name's Michael, representing, or with the AG Studio, representing our clients, Greg Wallace and Joe Sang. This is our proposal for 45 Clarendon Avenue. Project is a horizontal expansion towards the front of the lot. It also proposes to change the entry to ground level as well as connect the detached garage to the home. We chose to do a horizontal expansion towards the front as they wish to preserve a large portion of the current home as is. You can see the proposed area where we're requesting the side yard variance. Normal requirement would be 5 feet in RH1D districts. So if we look at the neighborhood block pattern, unique for RH1D. Very few of these properties actually have the 5-foot setback, and the ones that do only have it on one side for the most part, which is the case with our property. The west side has very little side setback, and the east side has a matching side setback with its neighbor. As we get closer to the site, we can look at the actual site conditions. The neighboring property to the west has zero side setbacks on either side. Our client's property has a side setback of about 1'7", so a big portion of the existing house already encroaches into this setback. And the east neighbor has no side setback on its east side. Since our west neighbor doesn't have side setbacks, it's resulted in a large blind wall with the property on the west that our project currently abuts up against. And the majority of this expansion would occur against this blind wall that is facing, the entire portion of our client's expansion would be against this large blind wall. Here's an aerial shot. The front one I showed earlier, the trees are blocking it. So you can see the large wall that's it's currently up against, as well as the other properties showing zero side setbacks. If we go to a 3D view of the existing and proposed, you can see that the portion that we're requesting a side yard variance for is entirely up against the neighbor's blind wall, and it really represents a very small part of the development. We've worked with the planning department and are currently at our 311 notification stage and haven't received any neighborhood feedback in any negative direction as far as I've seen. And we believe that due to the neighborhood block pattern, site context, existing neighboring structures, and the relatively small portion of the addition that would be non-compliant, we see that this would be justifiable reasons to request this variance from you today.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any members of the public who'd like to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, public comment is closed. It's interesting, the one picture you showed from the street, it kind of showed all the trees, showed the neighboring blind wall with the giant stair penthouse kind of projecting up, and you could just see Sutro in the back. It had a very indoor feel to it. To me, that was kind of interesting. But generally, I agree. There are obvious exceptional and extraordinary circumstances here with the significant topography in the rear that really kind of reduces the amount of buildable area. There's an obvious pattern of limited or no side setbacks here, and specifically on the side you mentioned, there's no side setback provided. There's a giant blind wall there. Providing the side setback there doesn't really provide any tangible benefits to your property or the adjacent property. And the way the design has been proposed in the terraced fashion at the front is consistent with other properties in the area. So I intend to approve with the general conditions. Thank you.
That's the last item, the only thing. Are you?
Do you want
to? For number one, Raycliffe, are you here for one, Raycliffe? Yes,
Sanchez is over for Raycliffe. I would prefer to just take it under advisement and not continue it.
So that's the decision?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
so we're not going to...
It was calendared. We called it. There was no one. There was no sponsor here. There was no public comment.
Okay.
Instead of continuing it, my preference is to just
advisement.
Take it under advisement.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's the last item then.
Okay. That brings us to general comment for anything that's not on the agenda. No one? Okay. Well, in that case, this meeting is adjourned.